This is HDN.
Monday, October 6th. This is Jamie and Lisa in the Beaver Bank Bunker.
Oh, we passed a bit of a sad milestone on the weekend. For the first time in 50 years, there were no animated kids' cartoons on network television this past Saturday morning.
Wow.
Yeah, the CW was the final holdout network-wise, and they ran a batch of cartoons.
What's weird is cartoons are still on TV, but they're on late at night now.
And that's the thing.
They're for the grown-ups.
Yeah.
They're for the same baby boomers that watch Saturday morning cartoons. We're all just staying up late and watching them now.
But NBC ditched their Saturday morning cartoons in 1992. CBS followed a few months later. ABC lost its animated weekend mornings back in 2004. And the CW, which was sort of lower tier on the broadcast food chain, they were the last holdout, but they killed it this past weekend. They now have sort of pseudo-educational programming on Saturday mornings, but wow, it's a sad end to an era.
You know, the first nail in the coffin, I think, was Head of the Class. Remember, that was like the first sitcom that they actually showed on Saturday mornings for kids.
No. I think the first nail in the coffin was the Cartoon Network, when all of a sudden kids realized that they had cartoons at their disposal 24/7.
And you know what? We just had this discussion over the weekend, and I know I've talked about it before, but it's very difficult to explain to a child nowadays that there was a time when if we missed The Grinch or Charlie Brown's Christmas, we'd have to wait a whole year to see it again. And they go, oh, yeah, you could tape it. No, you couldn't tape it. You didn't have it on DVD or Blu-ray or anything. There's no PVR. If you missed it, you missed it. There weren't a whack of channels. So, well, they're playing it on this other channel next week. And we had the two or three stations. And if you missed it, you missed it. And that made it a lot more exciting.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you were waiting, you were counting down the days for it, and then you were there in front of the TV.
It was a special occasion.
If a prime minister died or if a president decided to make a speech and interrupted it, it was the worst thing that could possibly ever happen because...
catastrophic.
You'd miss it for a year.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it'll be delayed and played back. They didn't have delay and playback. Like, you missed it. And so there were some pretty big childhood events that were interrupted by presidents talking about the Vietnam War and Watergate. And that's why I think when I'm watching television and one of those shows is on, one of those animated shows that, you know, come on once a year, even though we own the Blu-ray, I'll watch it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's kind of nostalgic, but but really explaining that to a kid, that's like trying to explain to somebody what it would be like without power. You know, without power, you wouldn't have that microphone. You can go till you're blue in the face talking about it, but you don't realize until you have that power failure. And then every 5 seconds you go, oh, I think I'm just going to turn on. Oh, I can't do that. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe we should have a day where kids, how could you do that? You couldn't.
I don't know if you can.
I was going to say, have a day where you only have that one show on and you can't record it, but you've got YouTube and you've
Netflix, Hulu. I mean, you name it, they've got it now, the kids. So they don't understand a world where this type of information programming entertainment wasn't available on demand.
And it's the fact that everything is available on demand now. I think that's taking a lot more than we realize away from the kids. You know, that delayed gratification.
Yep.
That whole, you know, saving up the money for a bike or, you know, and then waiting for it to come into the store so you can go and buy it or whatever. Now you just get on your computer, order it, and it's shipped to your house the next day.
Yeah.
Whether you got the money or not. I don't know if that's good or not.
I don't know. But I mean, it seems a little hollow to talk about, waking up in a world without Saturday morning cartoons. But I think it's a definite sign that we all had to grow up eventually.
Can you remember a time when you couldn't sleep because you were looking forward to Saturday morning cartoons so much?
Yes.
I mean, that was huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were only on during a certain period of time, too. So if you got up early, you got the crappy cartoons. And we'd have to entertain ourselves like Davy and Goliath, all the religious ones.
Yes.
That was Sunday morning, actually. We watched the, hey, Davy. those were great because they were cartoons. They weren't news. And then you'd wait for the good ones and you'd organize your time.
Your entire Saturday morning would be planned out. Star Trek came on at noon. That was the universal symbol for okay.
Okay, well, here's a question. When did Star Trek, the animated show, come on then? Because that was on Saturday. Oh, you don't remember the anime?
No.
They're embracing that now. It's hilarious. Whenever you see a Star Trek thing and they go, hey, we have Star Trek and then Next Generation and Voyager and animated series and they throw it in there. But it was such a piece of crap. It was
I'm sure it was.
It wasn't Sid and Marty Krofft, but it was, I forget who did it, but it was just it the same music that the Brady Bunch show had. You know what I mean? Like there was a whole bunch of cartoons based on TV shows that all came out around the same period in the 70s. And Star Trek was just as... the only real claim to fame that they have is the fact that they actually did use the original voices
because they were all
Spock's there going, I'll do it. They really didn't have much work between the end of the series and the beginning of the movie career that they all had. There was that period between 1969 and 1974 where they're all sitting around writing books saying, I'm not Spock and I am my own person. And
in the days before the fan fests
they jumped on anything. And that cartoon was just crap. But you get these hardcore, trekkers or trekkies they were right into the cartoon because that's all we had.
Yeah.
The show ended and we only had this stupid cartoon. It was if you squint your eyes, it's really almost like an old episode.
A really old one.
Yeah.
Almost $580,000 raised over the weekend at the CIBC Run for the Cure in Halifax. This is one of those events that I'm not sure how I feel about it. It was one of those fundraising events that was highlighted during an investigation into how much money actually goes towards the cause and how much money goes towards feeding the machine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of these places can become top heavy. And a lot of places they're very transparent now. Mm. But it used to be, if you wanted to run this event every single year and, just the logistics and the amount of money it took to put it on outweighed the amount of money they were actually bringing in. And immediately you start thinking, a bunch of fat cats up in an office. That's not always the case. Sometimes just the actual event is so grandiose that it costs so much to put on. The debits and credits that just don't work out.
Just talk to the people at Briony House. I'm sure they'll tell you. Such is the case.
Well, yeah, that's a perfect example. Yeah. They said, we're going to have a dream home as well. We can do that. There are other lotteries that have dream homes and they decide to put it on. But you know what? If you don't have that big marketing machine behind you, you have to spend money to make money.
Exactly.
You're not going to make your money back.
Yeah. But, Run for the Cure, I'm not sure what the percentages are as far as, how much they take in versus how much they spend. I forget the documentary now. It was all about the whole Pink Ribbon campaign and how the Pink Ribbon has been used more as a marketing tool as opposed to a fundraising thing. And I just don't know how I feel about that. I mean,
I know which documentary that was. Ebenezer Scrooge Reports. See all these people that are doing these good things? Well, let's twist that around and show you how bad it actually is.
Yeah.
But you know what? You have to do that because there are a lot of people throughout history that have kind of hidden behind the guise of doing wonderful things for the community. And then you realize, like Jim and Tammy Baker or that type of thing.
I guess it's about choices. There are so many people coming at you for your money.
Yeah.
For donations. I think that for me personally, I would prefer to give my money if I'm giving to breast cancer. I would give it to a smaller entity like Breast Cancer Action Nova Scotia that deals one-on-one with the patients. And
so you like dealing with smaller breasts, basically. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
You're going to get your ribbon and pin it on a smaller breast. One of the founders of Greenpeace.
Oh, yes.
Eventually left because Greenpeace got so big and they started, their causes were everywhere. And now it's like, we got to save the seals. And now we got to save this. And then it got so political. He just went back and his advice was, if you want to save the whales, give it to Save the Whales. If you want to save this, then do that. Don't give your money to somebody like Greenpeace because 9 times out of 10, it's going to go somewhere that you don't necessarily agree because they've got so many fingers and so many pies that... You know, if you want to tackle breast cancer, then give, as you said, to the people that are focusing right on breast cancer. You give it to a big blanket organization, and that money is going to be so thinned
dispersed.
Out and sent to so many different areas that it's really not going to have the clout that that you want after working so hard for it.
I think PETA ended up that way as well. I don't think PETA was ever as radical as they are now. People for the ethical treatment of animals.
Yeah, didn't they start off with like vivisection and, you know, all of the animal testing, and they did a really good job stopping all of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was all happening behind closed doors. They got the companies to say not tested on animals on their labels and all of that. Yeah, I do remember that. They were
a little more grassroots, a little more.
Well, their heart was in the right place, and I think it still is, but
they're going for the shock factor now.
Well, when you get that big, that's when you get the radicals on board. Yeah. That's when you get people. I mean, it's like religion. I don't think there's one religion in this entire world that doesn't start off with nothing but best intentions.
Sure.
Be good to one another, help out each other, you know, prepare yourself for the afterlife. All of these things, all of these questions that man has tackled, religion kind of covers them.
Mm.
But once you get powerful, once you start building huge palaces out of gold and you're wearing fancier uniforms than the people that actually come into the church, once you start saying, I'm going to blow myself up and everyone else in this room with me for this cause, then I think it's gone a bit astray.
You've lost the path somehow.
Yeah. We should turn this show into a religion.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. We'll call it. Oh, God. We could do Jim and Tammy.
Jim and Tammy.
There are churches on the internet that say if you want to be a minister in our church, if you want to be a part of our church, all we ask is that you say you will treat other people as well as you will treat yourself.
Mm.
Be good to one another. Like the very thing.
The Ellen DeGeneres philosophy.
As long as you, you know, walk out of a room with it cleaner than you walked into it with, and have that attitude towards everything in this world, that would be a hell of a religion.
Mm.
And I bet you we could get people following us who have the same thoughts and feelings. None of this, you know, you don't need all of the crosses and the Mohammeds and the Jesus and all of that. We're just be good to each other. Like, be kind, help each other out. We're all on this boat together. And, you know, and with a simple message like that, I think we could grow and get just as corrupt as Tammy and Jim.
Oh, that's the ultimate goal here, isn't it?
It's not a goal. I think that it's not necessarily a goal, but I think it is a result. The second all this money starts rolling in for people that go like, I agree with you guys. Let's just be good to one another. We'll go, yeah, this is really good. I'm thinking we should be good to ourselves now. You know, I mean, it's a very fine line. And I don't think it's human nature. I don't think there's one person who doesn't need those checks and balances, including those charities that start off with nothing but good intentions. Once they get too big, pretty soon the message and the money is lost in the machine.
And here endeth the lesson. Hey, the first ever beer awards were handed out over the weekend. The Atlantic Canada Beer Awards. This was for craft beers.
Oh.
Big Spruce Brewing Company's Serial Killer Stout. The People's Choice Award. It's a
just for the name?
Just for the name alone, yeah.
Now, where is this from?
They are Cape Breton-based microbrewery. I'm not sure whereabouts in Cape Breton, but this was the first ever Atlantic Canadian Beer Awards that were held Sunday evening in Halifax. Now, the beer of the year was actually a Moncton-based product. The Pump House Brewery snapped up a number of awards for its various brews, but it was the barley wine that won out over all else.
So that sounds like it would appeal to you and me.
I think so.
That's almost a wine.
Well, now, Brewery of the Year, Bad Apple Brew House in Somerset. And it's kind of neat that they're recognizing all of these smaller craft beer.
It's neat how they're springing up all over the place, too.
Yep. It's the wave of the future.
I don't know how I feel about Kraft getting into beer, though. I think that they should just stick with
to cheese.
Cheese and mac and cheese. Those are good. But beer, although they could have those recipes. Do you remember those on TV, the old Kraft recipes? oh, they would have those on, like, was it the Ed Sullivan Show or something? You'd have this voice and just these hands. It was like, and now we're going to teach you how to make peanut butter and cheese num-nums. Here's what you do. You set the oven for, and just in the course of 60 seconds, they would make a Kraft
Oh, really?
Meal. And it all that. Always featured Kraft cheese or Kraft peanut butter or Kraft something.
Yeah.
And then it always ended up looking like this big, fat, disgusting meatball that was there. Oh, man. Sorry. It was just this weird memory that just came back to me. Mm. Of course, I realized, don't write in, that Kraft beer is not Kraft, the company Kraft.
Yes. And finally, good to see online some pictures of the new splash pad in Sackville. This is the one that the Sackville Kinsmen are building in behind the clubhouse there on, was it Metropolitan Avenue? The forms are up. Looks like the concrete will be poured later this week. And fingers crossed, they'll be able to open the splash pad next summer. That's going to be fantastic right there on the lake. Just looking at the picture that Councillor Steve Craig tweeted out, this thing is going to be huge. So good on them for raising all that money.
To make a big splash.
To make a big pad. Splash.
And that's all the time we have for this Monday, October the 6th. We will be back, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, tomorrow.
Until then.